This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 19th of April 2024. Hello. And welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 18th of April 2024. Your readers today are Tony Bergstrom.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Jane Rutter.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are plans for music festival rejected, traders divided about impact of restaurants, and falcons expect to hear the patter of tiny talons. So we start with the first headline story.
Right. Plans for music festival rejected. Noise and public nuisance fears cited in the refusal. Plans for a music festival near Alsford have been dashed after civic chiefs rejected a licensing application. Brockwood Entertainment applied to Winchester City Council for a premises license to hold the festival over 4 days at Jones Acre near Hinton Ampner. This is after the applicant held events on the site in 2021 and 2022. The application was concerned with the sale of alcohol for consumption during the event and the showing of regulated entertainment. However, Winchester City Council's licensing subcommittee rejected the application on Wednesday, April the 10th, citing concerns about the lack of provision to ensure noise levels were kept to a minimum and worries over public nuisance. The application saw strong opposition from local residents who feared the event would turn into a smaller boom town, as well as the nearby Krishnamurti Foundation Trust based at Brockwood Park. Applicant Alastair Morton said, "We are devastated by the decision. We felt the application took into account all obligations."
Traders divided about impact of restaurants. Winchester market traders are divided about the potential impact of the new restaurants opening in the empty Debenhams store. Debenhams, which has been empty since 2021, is to be relet to a trio of restaurants with Five Guys and Nando's confirmed and Pizza Express expected to move into the ground floor. Three planning applications submitted to Winchester City Council by First Plan have confirmed that Five Guys and Nando's will be moving into the space, but it has not been confirmed if Pizza Express will be the third restaurant. On market days, stalls operate in front of the Debenhams unit, a temporary arrangement whilst the building is empty. It is not known when the restaurants will open, but once they do, a number of market stall pitches will be moved again. Amanda Harrington, who is behind the Biltong Lady, has been at the Winchester Market for 4 years and is directly outside Debenhams. She told the Chronicle she worries about losing her pitch and the rejig that will have to happen, and says she will have to advertise where her new position will be. Ms. Harrington said, "It will affect hot food at the market, no doubt, but it will also alter the dynamics of the high street. We will just ride the tide when it comes." Robert Hutton of Retro Rob's Vintage and Designer Clothing has been in the city for 3 years. He told the Chronicle the market is struggling generally, with fellow traders forced to give up with fewer people buying. Mr. Hutton admitted that he's concerned about the future of his pitch on Fridays, as he will have to be moved. Pauline Toppen, who runs the Shabik stall, said she feels great uncertainty and is worried about her future pitch position. Greek Catering, however, is very confident that Nando's and Five Guys won't impact them. After 1.5 years in Winchester, George Sackoff said his business provides unique food that nowhere else does. He said, "They will attract more people and that will be good for the high street. We've been in the business long enough to understand how it works. It's like a circle." Gillian Thorne has been at the market since Christmas with her Secret Garden Soaps stall. Although she was concerned about the impact on hot food stalls, she said, "It'll be good for bringing people into the city and making them stay. It will be beneficial." A Winchester City Council spokesperson said, "Market pitches in front of the former Debenhams building are a temporary arrangement whilst the building is closed. When the building reopens, designated space is available on the Lower High Street and Middlebrook Street on market days."
Falcons expect to hear patter of tiny talons. After an extended wait for the first egg, Winchester Cathedral's new resident peregrine falcon has now laid a second. Having laid her first egg on Friday, April the 12th, Mel's second arrived on Sunday, April the 14th. The new female appeared recently, closely followed by the death of her predecessor, Winnie. It is thought that Mel killed Winnie. Keith Betton, chairman of the Hampshire Ornithological Society, has been keeping a close eye on the peregrines. He said, "After a long wait for it, we are pleased to say that Mel laid her first egg on Friday afternoon and her second one on Sunday afternoon. Normally peregrines lay up to 4 eggs, so we can expect another. It may be that Mel will not lay more than 3, given that it's getting quite late for egg laying already. She will not incubate them continuously until maybe the 3rd egg, and that way the first 3 eggs should get the same amount of warmth and all hatch at around the same time. Incubation of the eggs will be carried out mainly by Mel, although William may take her place when she is off the eggs for a break. We can hope for chicks to hatch on around May the 17th or 18th. After that, the chicks should grow quite quickly, being ready to start flying at the end of June. There have been fears that Mel may not lay any eggs when a rogue male appeared at the start of April. Mr. Betton added, "We have seen William encouraging Mel to visit the tray and they have displayed to each other and mated, but no eggs have appeared. Matters were not helped when a rogue male peregrine appeared in the skies above the cathedral and Mel got very agitated and chased him off several times. Mel was named by the cathedral shortly after she arrived. They said, Mel is named after Melusina Trench, 1768 to 1827, the Irish writer, diarist, poet and social campaigner, whose Latin epitaph is still visible opposite the North Transept today. Mel was first sighted at the cathedral in February 2024 and since then has been displaying signs of nesting behaviour with William, the established male peregrine. In other news, the late Winnie's last chick, Rosie, was recently spotted in New Milton. Mr. Betton said, Friday was also a big day because we received news that Rosie, our only chick from 2023, is alive and well and looking great. She was photographed on the coast in New Milton, causing a certain amount of bother by accidentally approaching a peregrine nest there and getting sent off by the resident male. Rosie was the last of at least 27 chicks fledged by Winnie and will be old enough to nest in 2025.
That concludes the headline stories and we continue with the death announcements. Ayres, Malcolm William Ayres on the 19th of March. Bert, Leonard Arthur John Bert, at home on the 2nd of April, aged 93. Dalton, Valerie Ann Dalton, on the 6th of April, aged 76. Elliot, Jacqueline Edith Hind Elliot, at the Dower House Nursing Home on the 8th of April. Fenn, Nicholas Patrick Fenn, known as Nick, at Mountbatten, Hampshire, on the 29th of March, aged 75. Fuller, Betty Fuller, formerly Lewis, née West, on the 7th of April at Winchester Hospice. Furness, Mary Ellen Furness, née Cousins, on the 6th of April at Winchester Hospice. Goulding, Keith Goulding, at Winchester Hospital on the 5th of April. Jones, Gillian Leslie Jones, née Whedon, at home on the 20th of March. Marsh, Raymond Vivian Marsh, on the 6th of April, aged 93. Robinson, John E. Robinson, at home on the 6th of April, aged 92. He, of course, was the butcher in Stockbridge. Sibbeth, Christa Maria Sibbeth, née Lane, at Southampton General Hospital, aged 92, on the 18th of March. Todd, Alfred Todd, known as Alf, aged 89. Wilson, Michael Wilson, known as Orchie, at Winchester Hospice on the 25th of March, aged 81. Scott, Phyllis Amy Scott, on the 19th of April. And now we have Christian comment.
Christian comment this week is from the Reverend Philip Crinks, and he entitles it The New Creation. In Eastertide, we're in a world made new. Like the disciples, we encounter the power of the risen Christ. Like the disciples, our reactions will be many and varied. That is because his power is one beyond our wildest dreams. The Gospel writers tell us how the disciples experienced an extraordinary sense of Jesus' continued presence with them after his death. It's not all the time, and not with exactly the same kind of bodily presence that Jesus had before, but still they have that definite sense of his risen presence. Their writings do not pull their punches in describing the disciples' initial reactions. They range from terror and bewilderment, Mark, to joy and praise, Matthew, amazement, Luke, and faith and doubt, John. Some people find these diverse reactions surprising, and the resulting open-endedness of the story of the earthly ministry of Jesus unsatisfying. But that's a mistake. If anyone is in Christ, the new creation has come. The old has gone, the new is here. The world has been completely remade. The immediate result is inevitably strong and varying reactions and openness as to what will come next. From the Acts of the Apostles, we know what the disciples decided. Initial terror, bewilderment, and doubt gave way within a few days to faithful joy and praise. They decided that their experience of the resurrection confirmed that Jesus is the King who God has promised his people, who offers the way to reconciliation between people and between us and God. And it confirmed that they should live the new kind of life following the commandments Jesus has given them. They would live in a way which prioritized healing, good deeds in the service of others, and release from whatever oppresses us. What the disciples decided is important because of what it led to. They received new gifts of the Holy Spirit at Pentecost. They fulfilled Jesus' command to establish a new community, the church, a new form of human life based on the Easter faith. In this community, humanity is remade anew. The divisions and boundaries and bigotries of human society are transcended and rendered obsolete. Its new ways are the paths of forgiveness, peacemaking, patience, and truth-telling. What is even more important, though, is how we respond and how do we understand the presence of the risen Jesus in our lives. Do we believe that he goes before us into Galilee of our lives? To our homes? To our workplaces? Do we then choose to live this new life, joining and to helping to build the community of the church and the kingdom which Jesus proclaimed? This is a kingdom which is ordered not to the old order of sin and death, but to the new order of reconciled life in all its fullness. The cross was humanity's greatest no to God, but the resurrection of Jesus was God's even greater yes. The Easter faith is to join in that yes. Yes to the renewal of creation and to the fullness of life with God forever. Alleluia! Christ is risen. He is risen indeed. Alleluia! And that is from the Reverend Philip Crinks.
Next, we have the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860836, that's 01962 860836, emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. We've got 12 letters this week on a variety of subjects.
And the first of those subjects you'll see is in a letter from Chaz Woodhead, which is entitled A Wash with Dosh. Winchester City Council seems to be so awash with dosh that it can squander millions upgrading, tarting up the railway station approach. Hampshire County Council is so cash-strapped that they are unable to meet their obligation to maintain our roads in a pothole-free condition. That's from Chaz Woodhead, Woodfield Drive, Winchester.
This letter from Pat Brockway is entitled Franciscan Friars at St Peter's Church. I was interested to see your old photos in bygone Hampshire, looking back through the ages, on page 25 of last week's Chronicle. One shows the doorway of St Peter's Roman Catholic Church in Drury Street. The men in habits are not monks, but Franciscan friars. We can tell that they are Catholics because their ropes hang down their right sides. Anglican friars have their ropes on the left-hand side. It looks as if most are life professed because they have three knots. I imagine that the man in the dog collar centre front is the parish priest, who at that time would have been Monsignor Malarkey, who held the post from 1941 until 1977. I hope this helps. And that very informative letter was from Pat Brockway, Springvale Road in Kingsworthy.
Oppressed and harassed. I am feeling oppressed and harassed as a Winchester resident by the current actions of the parking department at Hampshire County Council. Last night, I was amongst other motorists picking up my daughter from a London train. The train was delayed and it became difficult to find a space to wait. In the 10-minute delay, two parking officers emerged, happily taking down details of cars waiting on limited spaces around the usually empty taxi lanes. Surely this is preying on motorists as opposed to routine parking control. It is time to question the motives behind these actions, and it looks and feels like monetary targets and prevailing over good considered decisions. You can't get a permit for passenger collection from the station. They don't exist. In the street where I live, there are constant patrols by these parking officers, often at 8 a.m. at weekends. This is frustrating harassment and makes a struggle to respect their decisions and the actions of their officers. And this letter is from Belinda Myers Fordham, St. Catherine's Road, Highcliffe, Winchester.
Chris Sharrett writes that it's not too late for road protests. Last week, Tony Atherton of Hairstock and Dave Alderson of South Wanston asked for sensible explanations of the decision to close Andover Road. There isn't one. But all becomes clear if you realise the real reasons behind it. There was considerable local feeling against developing Barton Farm, especially in Hairstock and Week, but in the end, central government pressed for a site north of Winchester to be developed or else. So Carla Holmes and Winchester College got their way. An extra primary school was included, and replacement space for sports pitches at the local secondary school in Hairstock to accommodate more pupils there, accessed via a footbridge over Andover Road to be paid for by Carla Holmes. But that still left the city councillors taking the flak for giving away. They needed a sop to placate the voters in Hairstock and Week. That was when some clever dick dreamt up the idea of closing Andover Road and diverting the traffic through the new estate. The councillors could tell the voters of Hairstock and Week that they were better off with traffic fumes and noise moved further away, although put literally outside some else's front door. That didn't matter because no one would be buying one of the new houses for ages. And Carla Holmes got away with not having to pay for a footbridge over Andover Road. It may be too late to have a judicial review, but it is not too late for rolling protests down Andover Road. So writes Chris Sharrett, Waverley Drive, South Wanston.
This letter from Tom Williams is entitled Holmes Help. In her letter, published in the Chronicle of April the 11th, City Councillor Caroline Horrell asks where the 900 new homes, currently earmarked for the Sir John Moore Barracks site, will be located. It may have escaped her notice that if the sensible course of using publicly owned land for a new hospital is agreed, a large publicly owned site at Romsey Road, within easy walking distance of the city centre, will become available for development for social housing, and traffic from 900 new homes will not have to use an already inadequate Andover Road, by then redirected through Kings Barton, to access the city. And that's from Tom Williams, Hairstock Road, Winchester.
And this letter is from John Morse, entitled No Free Ride. Your correspondent, Mike Walker, Hampshire Chronicle Online, April 4th, refers to the election leaflet in all but name, promoting Tory candidate and sitting PCC Donna Jones in the election next month for Police and Crime Commissioner. This turned up in the same envelope as our council tax bills, delivered, paid for by courtesy of the Hampshire taxpayer. This free ride at public expense is not the only attempt at stealing an unfair, and possibly illegal, march on Ms. Jones' three rival candidates. Last Wednesday's annual town meeting in Petersfield was pretty much hijacked by her party. Ms. Jones was given an exclusive platform to promote herself, well pre-advertised in the local newspaper. No room for any other candidate or for any critical voice to be heard. But it turns out, at least in PCC elections, that there is no official agency anywhere with powers to rein in such abuses as they arise during any campaign. So unscrupulous politicians do as they like. Donna Jones has failed to deal with serious matters during her time in office. It's surely time to end party political control of the police. At least two of her opponents in the election favour abolishing the expensive, overpaid and underperforming PCC role altogether. A vote against Donna Jones would prove at least one nail in the coffin of this whole rotten setup. And that is from John Morse, Hyde Close, Hyde, Winchester.
This letter from Charlie Wilson is about gaining trust. Danny Chambers and Labour's parliamentary candidate are not fit to MPs. Just take the below comment made by Mr. Chambers. One comment was particularly personal. Quote, I met a dyslexic bloke in Yorkshire the other day. I knew he was dyslexic as soon as I saw him. He had a cat flap on his head. I have many family members, including my father, who was dyslexic. His parents worked hard and gave him all the opportunities to thrive in life by sending him to good schools. Funnily enough, our Winchester Labour candidate now wants to stop this sort of thing by imposing a new additional 20% of VAT on all education, which will force the most disadvantaged pupils out of the best schools. My grandparents were not wealthy. My grandmother was a nurse and my granddad worked in a printing press. The Independent Schools Council, an independent group which holds such schools to account, notes that such schools fund the salaries of 115,000 nurses. Can Winchester's Labour candidate explain how she intends to fund the salaries of these nurses if pupils leave the independent school sector as expected? Furthermore, can Danny Chambers explain how he intends to gain the trust of the dyslexic community if elected? That's from Charlie Wilson, Barfield Close, Bar End, Winchester.
This letter from Sue Lane is about a plaque erected at Swing Riot's site. Following recent correspondence from Edward Fennell, Chronicle Letters March the 28th, and Christopher Gordon, April the 11th, readers may be interested to know that Wanston Parish Council, with support from Bullington and Barton Stacey Parish Councils, erected a plaque on the Coach and Horses pub across the square in Sutton Scotney from the former White Swan Inn, a meeting place of the Swing Rioters from many surrounding villages. The plaque records a letter carried by hand to King William IV, describing their desperate living conditions and appealing for parliamentary reform. It lists the signatories and describes the fate of those who were later imprisoned, transported, or hanged for their part in the subsequent uprisings. The plaque was unveiled by a descendant of Enos Didymes, one of the signatories, and among those present was Jill Chambers, author of Hampshire Machine Breakers, The Story of the 1830 Riots. The form that memorials should take has been much discussed in recent times, Jane Austen being one example. For my money, a written record outweighs sculpture in most instances, and as for Jane, surely her books are a sufficient memorial. And that letter is from Sue Lane, Wanston Road in Sutton Scotney.
And this letter is from Ted Hart, entitled Saddened by Car Park Prices. I was saddened to read in the Chronicle that Winchester car parks are among the priciest in the country, April the 11th. I have written before expressing my disgust of the introduction of the recent nighttime and Sunday charges and the detrimental effect it has on the city. However, my mood rose when I saw that one of the main architects of their implementation, Councillor Kelsey Learney, was up for re-election in the St Barnabas ward. I am not a constituent of that ward, but I would like to call on those who share my view on the car parking charges and are against the sale of the River Park Leisure Centre complex to Southampton University, among other things, to use their vote as a protest and change their council representative. To show my views are not politically motivated, I would also like to say that anyone who wants to see Winchester continue to grow and support its population's aspirations does not vote for Conservative candidate Flick Drummond. And that is from Ted Hart, Maytree Close, Badger Farm.
Believe it or not, writes David Hoggett, whilst I am impressed with Mike Wyatt's two holes in one, holes in one at odds of 67 million to one, Chronicle, April the 11th, I would remind him that he is a laggard to some others. Donald Trump informed Piers Morgan that he has scored seven in his lifetime. And of course, North Korea's President Kim Jong-il scored 11 on his first ever round of golf in 1994. Now, some cynics might suggest there is gross lying going on here, but I think Mr. Wyatt looks very believable in his photo. That's from Dave Hoggett, Northbrook Avenue, St. Giles Hill, Winchester.
And this praise for help is from David Killeen. Southern Water has been criticised on a range of issues locally recently, from residential water outages to sewage overflows and burst mains. However, I wanted to praise their response to the high groundwater levels causing basement flooding and infiltration of the underground sewage pipes in the village of Hursley. Southern Water has deployed tankers to pump out and take away the village sewage and avoid releasing contaminated water into our chalk streams for 24 hours a day for several weeks now. Tankers take 1 to 2 hours to fill before the next replacement tanker takes its place at the pumping station without a break in service. I would also like to thank the tanker operators and our local councillor Jan Warwick, who has liaised with Southern Water throughout this challenging time for our residents. I would like to apologise to anyone who is delayed by the temporary traffic lights in the village, and to those who are disturbed by the sound of pumping. I would like to extend the thanks from villagers to Southern Water for ensuring we can continue to use our toilets. And that's from David Killeen, BEM, Chair of Hursley Parish Council in Hursley.
And this letter is from Mrs. P. Dollery, and it's entitled Letting Country Go to Ruin. Who are these people who dictate how we live and die? The rogues in Parliament, of course, with their own properties, cars, holidays and bonuses, who live in luxury and keep the rest of the country in poverty, especially pensioners who've worked all their lives, myself 68 years, and have to resign themselves to a life of misery when or if they can retire. Does anyone in this government have to decide, shall we eat or heat? It's ludicrous, and they have brought this country to ruin. The idle layabouts that choose not to work are kept by taxpayers, especially pensioners who have a small pension from a previous employer. These pensioners were told and forced to take a private pension, but they weren't told it would be taken in tax to subsidise the growing concern of people who do not wish to work. Why drop the national insurance? Where is the money coming from for the next generation pensions? tax again, of course. This government wants us all to go private for healthcare, so decent people will go to the gutter. No matter what party wins the election, the difference of how we have to live will be nil, because none of them are out to give hard-working people a decent way of living standards, only to fill their own pockets of a life of luxury. As for the choice of how to die, what gives this or any other government a right to dictate whether we choose euthanasia or die in agony with our loved ones looking on? Our life is ours to choose how we die, not the dictatorship of people who have let this country go to ruin. They are incapable of that choice. And this letter is from Mrs. Dollery, Mrs. P. Dollery, Winnell Manor Road, Winnell, Winchester.
That concludes the letters, and we now have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment, and that will be followed by First Person.
Editorial comment this week is entitled Success Story is Under Our Noses. Winchester people love nature, as membership of conservation and environment bodies attests. People love rambling across the Hampshire countryside or working to enhance nature, such as the work on St Giles Hill. Many take part in wildlife surveys. But when one thinks of the drama and the power of nature, it is to places like Africa and the oceans that the mind turns. Herds of wildebeest on the savannah or blue whales singing to each other in the Atlantic. We can overlook the spectacles in our own country. Few things can match the beautiful murmuration of starlings with thousands flying in formation at sunset. And here in Winchester, we have had an example of the savagery of existence. Winnie the Peregrine has been a resident on the tower of the cathedral for around 10 years, latterly with a male called William. Together they have raised many chicks. Last year's offspring, Rosie, has been recently spotted in New Milton. But to the shock of many, Winnie was killed, with the culprit almost certainly a young peregrine called Mel, who arrived on the scene, usurped her role and mated with William. In the last few days, Mel has laid 2 eggs. Keith Betton of Hampshire Ornithological Society predicts she could lay a couple more. This is Shakespearean drama taking place in the heart of the city that would be worthy of an Attenborough documentary. The return of peregrines across the UK after near extinction is a conservation success story. We do not need to look to Africa or the oceans. It is here under our noses, and we need to look after it.
This article by Joanna Lewis is entitled Learning to Live with Rats. Is there any topic today which can be discussed without provoking a massive argument? Disagreements now seem to run the risk of instant polarisation and rapid escalation. It's worse if you have an outward-facing public role and say something controversial, or say nothing at all about something controversial. Inevitably, social media's juggernaut of hate will hurtle towards you, fuelled by about as much individual thought and intellectual sophistication as a migrating wildebeest. At social gatherings, the rule used to be, don't mention religion or politics. That way, differences didn't get too personal. Or if you were having a dinner party, no one left with a pastry fork in their knee. Now, the only safe topic for polite discussion seems to be, do you prefer Aldi or Lidl? Even this opening observation could provoke howls of recrimination. Being nostalgic about the past is now frowned upon as an implicit criticism of wokeism, mass immigration, or the right to identify as a pickled onion. And so here we are, a social, a society either silenced or shouting. which is exactly what Chinese and Russian disinformation campaigns want, a democratic country too enfeebled to oppose their territorial expansion and human rights abuses. Well, rats to you. No, seriously, rats. Another topic creating division. In his new book, Joe Shute wants to change how we think about rats. Stow away the disreputable exploits of the rat, Bloomsbury 2024, recounts his journey to understand the world of the rat, a world he insists we've misunderstood. But those tales, I hear you cry. The diseases. We've been brought up to fear and despise the whiskery little blighters. Our language says it all in our insults, from dirty rat to love rat. Yet research has revealed that the saying that you're never more than 6 feet away is exaggerated. Colonies usually contain small, settled populations that live in the same area for generations. Why do we hate them so much? Out of all vermin, why should rats get such a bad press? Specifically when millions are used in scientific laboratories testing modern-day drugs. Part of the reason lies in their cleverness, their innate ability to see an opportunity to adapt and outwit us. Take bird food. I remember my first state-of-the-art bird feeder, stuffed full of expensive seeds and nuts. I was constantly replenishing it, but there were no birds. Then I saw something dangling from the fat balls, the size of a small Jack Russell. Also, they're always around horrible things like environmental catastrophes or junk food outlets. They stalk our nightmares of the time of the plague, to a world without bin collections and a return to the 1970s. Yet rats are highly sentient beings. They laugh when tickled. When one of them dies, they cover up the body. Rats can be trained to clear minefields. Their powerful sense of smell is being used to detect TB. Joe Shute wants violent impulses built on irrational fear to be replaced with tolerance, respect and affection. I can sympathise. Years ago, when I lived in Cambridge, a friend rented a room from an eccentric college don who delighted in shocking people. She kept pythons in the sitting room and a raccoon upstairs. One day, her delightful Victorian kitchen table was taken over by a large cage. She had rescued unwanted lab rats. Mavis Davis and Gerald became tame and teachable, their personalities soon as strong as the smell of their urine.
Oh.
What we certainly need are more humane ways to control excessive numbers. In New York, they're experimenting with ingestible forms of contraception. In Paris, the smart money is backing genetic modification. Rat poison is no longer acceptable. Rats are becoming resistant. The poison often seeps into the wider ecosystem, putting pets and wildlife at risk. Learning a new way to live alongside rats is going to be hard, but perhaps not as hard as living with each other.
Oh. Now to the week's announcements. There are a number of What's On items. Continuing until Wednesday the 12th of June at the Arc, Essex House Tapestries, the life story of Julie Cope, a fictional character created by the artist Grayson Perry. On Thursday the 25th of April, there will be a concert in the cathedral with London Concertante, and they will be playing music from the movies, iconic scores and soundtracks from the greatest movies of all time. On Friday the 26th and Saturday the 27th of April, the Worthy Players will present Neighbourhood Watch by Alan Ayckbourn at the Jubilee Hall in King's Worthy. From Friday the 26th of April till Sunday the 28th of April, there is a Spring Steam Gala at the Watercress Line. On Saturday the 27th of April in the Cathedral, the world-renowned French organist Olivier Latry will give a concert on the newly restored organ. Here's the organeur titulaire at Notre Dame.
I've got tickets for that.
On Thursday the 2nd of May at the Arc, art historian Andrew Graham Dixon will be talking about art appreciation. From Friday the 3rd to Monday the 6th of May is the Winchester Chamber Music Festival. On Monday the 6th of May, which is bank holiday, the King Alfred buses will be having a running day. From Saturday the 18th of May to Saturday the 25th of May at the Chesil Theatre, there will be a play about the Bronte family. And then on Thursday the 30th of May, the event of the year, the Winchester Talking Newspaper Annual General Meeting at Littleton Village Hall at 2 p.m. The speaker will be Chris Dixon, the Chief Executive Officer of OpenSight, and the meeting will be followed by tea.
Splendid.
Sunrise around now is around 6 o'clock in the morning, and sunset is around 8 p.m. in the evening. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. That's 01962 861 229. And this number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. We now continue with further items of news.
Three men arrested on suspicion of fraud. Three people have been arrested on suspicion of fraud following a suspected rogue trader incident in South Wanston. Police were called at 1:40 p.m. on Wednesday, April the 3rd, to a report that a man in his 70s was being overcharged for unnecessary work on his house. The alarm was raised by a neighbour. It was reported that the victim had been cold-called about repairing guttering before being told that his roof needed replacing at a cost of £10,000. Whilst the work had started, no money had exchanged hands. Officers went to the house and two men were arrested at the scene. A third man was detained soon after. A police spokesperson said a 21-year-old man from London was arrested on suspicion of conspiracy to obtain services dishonestly and participating in fraudulent business carried by a sole trader. A 28-year-old man was arrested on suspicion of obtaining services dishonestly and participating in fraudulent business carried by a sole trader. A 23-year-old man from London was arrested on suspicion of fraud by false representation. All three men are currently in custody whilst our inquiries continue. We would like to take this opportunity to give some crime prevention advice around these sorts of offences. No one should feel pressured into committing to something they don't want or need on their doorstep. Police are urging residents to read crime prevention advice and share with friends, family and neighbours. And here are some points worthy of listening to. Discuss any work you feel needs carrying out on your property with a relative or friend who can help you find a reputable trader. Always check the credentials of unknown callers. Anyone selling door-to-door needs a peddler's certificate, which you can ask to see. Don't agree to any work or sign anything on the spot. Do not be pressured into having any work carried out. Never pay cash up front and never go to the bank or cash point with a trader. If you suspect a rogue trader is at your door or if you feel intimidated or they're refusing to leave, call 999. And finally, keep an eye on elderly or vulnerable neighbours, friends and family.
Row over axe for trees that pose a risk to life. City Council tree officers wanted to refuse plans to fell six poplar trees despite local support. An applicant listed as J. Giuliano wants to remove and replace the trees at Newhouse, Down Farm Lane in Hebburn Worthy. The application was due to be decided by Winchester City Council's Planning Committee yesterday, Wednesday, April the 17th. The plans have received 9 supporting comments, saying the trees are dangerous. The Worthies ward councillor, Jackie Porter, also supports it. She said, during the wet weather in January, February, one tree fell and landed on other houses, electricity cables, and just missed family bedrooms and study. I would like to see a tree planting plan to replace with appropriate trees in the fullness of time. Trees in this area soak up some of the groundwater, but also create a real hazard when they rot at or near the base. Anita Gibson of Down Farm Lane said, the trees are now oversized, and a similar tree has recently been blown down during high winds, falling across a road. The trees submitted for removal pose a risk to life and property, particularly with the more frequent strong winds that we are encountering in recent years. Sam Whitworth of Springvale Road said, please enable these trees to be removed as soon as possible. Earlier this year, other poplar trees fell, endangering lives and property. We've had one warning and should not wait for another. The tree officer's report said the trees should not be felled due to them having a high amenity value. The report said, these mature poplar trees can be clearly seen from a number of public standpoints, so have a good public visual amenity value as a group. The removal of these 5 protected poplar trees would have a significant detrimental impact on the landscape and character of the local area. And we can update this story, since I was chairing the committee, by telling you that the application to fell these trees was refused.
And this article is headed Bid to Crest, 2 S's, Wave with Festival World Record. An Alsford resident will attempt to break a world record at this year's Watercress Festival. Glenn Walsh will try to eat 80 grams of watercress in under 37 seconds. This will be part of the festival's World Watercress Eating Championship, where competitors pit themselves against each other to eat a bag of the plant in the fastest time. The festival committee has applied to record this year's competition as an official world record attempt. The current holder is, I'll try and pronounce this, Fatinazar Faris from India, who won the record at a time of 37.68 seconds on May the 10th, 2023, in Abu Dhabi. Glenn Walsh broke the record at last year's festival, finishing off his bag of watercress in 31.29 seconds. However, this was not an official world record attempt, as a Guinness judge was not present. This year it could be different. Simon Evans Entertainments, manager for the festival, said, Glenn has been amazing us for many years with his watercress eating abilities, and we decided that this year we had to formalise his achievement by applying for an official Guinness World Record attempt. We are wishing Glenn lots of luck, but of course there may be somebody else out there who can beat him, and this is definitely the year to try and claim the record. Anyone can sign up for the competition, which takes place on the main stage. The other attractions will include the return of the Maker's Market and a raffle. Charlie Jewett and Catherine Ruth Church, capturing the general atmosphere of the event, and are offering to paint portraits of goers, their children and pets, or whatever they choose. The team at Season Cookery School, Lainston House Hotel, will be running the popular barbecue workshops they introduced last year.
MP joins litter pickers in city centre sortie. Winchester MP Steve Brine joined the Winchester litter pickers in one of their regular city centre sorties, concluding with a drink in the willow tree. Mr. Brine said, "The Winchester litter pickers go out in all weather, week in, week out, to keep our city clean. It's a huge service they do for Winchester, and we should all thank them for it. Meeting every week for the past 30 years, the Winchester litter pickers are a team of volunteers aided by council grants. Picking up an estimated 1,000 bags of litter per year, the group not only aims to encourage others in the city to recycle, but in turn supports services such as the air ambulance through their efforts. The group, easily visible in their high-vis apparel, is committed to positive action to tackle the problem of littering, often meeting up after their work to enjoy a coffee and a chat. The Winchester litter pickers not only provide a service, but in addition a place for people to come together." And there's a photograph here of Steve Brine with 10 litter pickers. I know it's 10 because I've just counted them in the picture. And they're all standing there looking very pleased with themselves, and so they should.
Indeed. College in UK's top 30 private schools. Winchester College has been ranked in the top 30 private schools in the UK by Carfax Education Index. The private school has 714 pupils with alumni... People who used to go there.
Alumni.
I knew I was saying it wrong. Including colonial administrators of 19th century British occupied India, cricketers, and current Prime Minister Rishi Sunak. The fees for 2024 to 25 are £51,550 per annum for boarders and £38,367 for day pupils. That's pretty eye-watering, isn't it? The school has 18 Grade 1, 6 Grade 2 star, and more than 70 Grade 2 listed buildings across its site. It owns 250 acres, including 52 acres of playing fields. Carfax Education Index described the school as academically rigorous, the Winchester style of teaching is to guide rather than govern, and their unique interdisciplinary DIV programme has given generations of Wykhamists, former pupils, the ability to explore ideas and make connections beyond the examined curriculum. This academic agility ensures top A-level results and a stellar roster of university destinations. The Maketh Venture, an innovation hub, ensures that curious minds can also develop commercial reasoning. The new head teacher, the first female in the role, is committed to preserving discussion and debate and the values of a liberal education. And now the school motto, "Manners Maketh Man," will be expanded to include girls who have recently started as day pupils in the sixth form.
Flytip, one of worst examples, and the photograph certainly confirms that. New photos show a large flytip in the countryside near Winchester. The flytip is on Fawley Lane, which runs from Morstead to Chesford Head. The dumped items, which have been there for more than a week, consist of household items, including clothes, plastic bottles, cardboard boxes, a pram, and several shopping bags, including from upmarket Waitrose. Winchester resident Robert Carter called the site one of the worst examples of fly tipping I've seen around Winchester. "I can't help thinking that the booking system at Hampshire County Council persists with at their local recycling centres doesn't help with this type of fly tipping." The City Council spokesperson said, "This fly tip has been reported to us and our team, and is now in the process of removing it. We are investigating the evidence to see if a prosecution can be brought forward.
Council to decide controversial plan. Planning chiefs are due to decide if a bungalow can be built in a Hampshire village garden. Chris Southcott wants to build on land behind 74 and 76 Loveden Lane in Kingsworthy. The scheme has been controversial, with objections from the Worthies ward councillor Steve Cremoisen and Kingsworthy Parish Council. Six members of the public have also sent objections. The application was due to be decided by Winchester City Council's Planning Committee on Wednesday, April the 17th. Planning officers have recommended it for permission. The officer's report said the proposal is considered to be acceptable and to comply with relevant local plan policy. The proposed dwelling is single storey and will not visually dominate the area or site. The dwelling faces into the site and is situated away from the rear boundary, and therefore is not considered to cause harm to the setting and enjoyment of the public open space in Friars Close. Windows have been positioned so as to avoid overlooking neighbouring properties, and the height, mass and scale of the proposed building are such that there will be no impact from overbearing or overshadowing towards adjoining properties. Councillor Cremoisen said, "There are a number of areas where the proposal is not policy compliant. The development would not be in keeping with the character of the area. It would have an adverse impact on existing and future residents' amenity. It would also result in a highway safety impact. There is not such demand for new housing in this area that a substandard scheme should be allowed. I would ask you to refuse this proposal." The objection from the parish council said this proposed development constitutes overdevelopment of the site, and the size of the proposed dwelling will have a significant adverse effect on both the character of the surrounding area as well as the amenity of neighbouring properties. Excuse me. Heather Marshall of Loveden Lane said, "There is insufficient space for parking for visitors and or deliveries or workforce, etc. on this small site. This will lead to dangerous parking on Loveden Lane on the curb, likely leading to an increase in traffic accidents and congestion. Furthermore, it is unlikely that emergency vehicles will be able to access the property due to a narrow access road with potential service cables above, particularly in event of a fire causing a hazard to the new proposed houses and residents as well as those surrounding them."
Royal greetings mark couple's diamond day. A Winchester couple have celebrated their diamond wedding anniversary with a special delivery from the royal family. Hairstock residents Pat and Tony Wood received a card from the King and Queen to mark 60 years of married life. The pair met at night school in Portsmouth in 1961. Pat, who is a keen artist, was working as a draftsperson for Portsmouth Water at the time. She decided to do a Spanish course, and Tony was her tutor. They married at St Cuthbert's Church in the Baffins area of Portsmouth on Easter Monday, March the 30th, 1964. They celebrated their 60th anniversary with a meal at the Hotel de Vannes and a special anniversary cake. Alongside a message from the royal family, the couple also had messages from Steve Bryan MP, from local councillors, and a card and flowers from their nearby Waitrose. And there are some delightful pictures of the couple on their wedding day and then 60 years later, and lots of lovely cards. But really, you can tell that they've barely changed. They are very recognisable and very happy couple. Lovely.
Recognition in rural Oscars. Four Hampshire businesses are celebrating after receiving honours at this year's Rural Oscars. Westleigh Farm Shop, near Alresford, beat thousands of other nominees to claim the Local Food Award at this year's Countryside Alliance Awards. Shop owner Rachel Pepiat said, "I'm very proud to have been put forward for this award in the first place, and I'm so grateful to all the customers who voted for us. We were so excited to have been nominated, but to hear that we've won it is really quite overwhelming. It was a public vote, so massive thank you must go to our local customers who took the time to vote for us, and I hope that we play a small but valuable part in our local community." The farm shop was not the only business honoured at the awards. With the Honey Bee Happy Bee Farm in Cheriton receiving a highly commended award in the rural enterprise category. Rachel Annette, who owns the beekeeping business, said she was completely speechless when she heard the results. She said, "We heard it was out of more than 17,000 local nominations that we came second, out of which I was quite pleased about. At this time of year, we are really just the beekeeping business. We do our experiences as the weather gets warmer. So it was lovely that our followers on social media to vote for us. We're a small business, but obviously we make a difference to the community."
Going mad at Mucky Weekender Festival. The Mucky Weekender Festival will be returning to Winchester in 2024 with another day added to its roster. The Mad Hatter's Tea Party will be taking place at the festival from September the 5th to the 7th at Vicarage Farm in Winchester. After last year's sold-out event, which included a marriage proposal, the Music and Arts Festival will be extending to 3 days. The festival's fifth edition will feature 5 music stages showcasing a diverse range of genre from dub, ska, reggae, jungle and house to disco, funk, breakbeat and anything else in between.
Anything left?
Well done if you know what any of those are. Host Barry Ashworth and his band Dub Pistols will be joined by 5,000 festival goers for afternoon tea and cake at the Mad Hatter's Tea Party, with fancy dress as your favourite Alice in Wonderland character encouraged. Curated by Barry, festival organiser and patron of Tonic Music for Mental Health, the festival highlights the diversity of a lineup, which includes a ska and reggae 9-piece collective, electronic dance music, a 13-piece band with big brass and bass. The acts will be joining a list of veteran artists, DJs, big stage takeovers, and up-and-coming talent, the organisers say. A number of special guests have yet to be announced.
Talk on Life Behind Bars. The reality of life behind bars will be discussed by Winchester Prison Governor James Bourke as part of the Winchester Books Festival. His talk on April the 19th is part of the Doing Time project, a book and exhibition supported by the Office of the Police and Crime Commissioner for Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, which also shares the stories of the people who live and work at Winchester Prison. It tells the story of 175 years of its history, the harsh regimes of the past, and today's focus on education, training and reform. Prison life is revealed through the stories of staff who share the challenges of supporting prisoners with complex social, mental and physical needs. The book and exhibition were written by Winchester Magazine editor Liz Kavanagh, who spent more than 6 months visiting the prison before, after and during the pandemic. Photography by award-winning Winchester photographer Javed Akhtar features throughout, revealing the stark reality of prison life. Mr. Bork said. Last year, 2,700 men passed through Winchester Prison on remand, awaiting release and serving sentences. My talk will provide an overview of 175 years of prison history and the many individuals who make up the prison, from our dedicated teachers, healthcare staff, and prison officers to the prisoners themselves.
MP Hope's visit will inspire students. Earlier this month, St. Swithin's sixth form politics students visited the Houses of Parliament, learning about the workings of government from Mian Valley MP Flick Drummond. Ms. Drummond addressed their questions about her role, as well as local and national political issues. The trip included a tour of Westminster Palace, with stops at the House of Commons and the House of Lords and the Supreme Court chambers. Miss Drummond said she hoped the visit would spark a greater interest in the democratic process. Head of Politics Alex Wilson said experiential learning opportunities like this are invaluable to our students. It's one thing to read about how Parliament works in textbook, but actually being here and seeing it brings the subject to life in a way that simply cannot be replicated in the classroom. Ms. Drummond said, "It's always a pleasure to meet young people who are interested in politics and eager to learn more about how government functions. I hope that today's visit has inspired these students to become more actively engaged citizens, and perhaps even consider a career in public service in the future."
Hero Laura loses her locks for two good causes. And I should point out that Hero is spelt H-A-I-R-O. And you'll see the significance of that in the article. A dementia care home resident became a Hero to ensure a long-haired staff member could lose her lovely locks for two good causes. Gillian Swaby went hands-on to help cut 13 inches of Laura Sheldrake's hair in the salon at Colton Cares St Catherine's View in Winchester. It was the first haircut for Laura, the home's companionship team leader, since June 2021, and was done in aid of both the Little Princess Trust and the Boaz Project. Under the guidance of professional hairdresser Olina Braharenko, Laura's hair was neatly parted so that Gillian and home manager Vanda Baker, standing either side with scissors at the ready, could cut half each. "This is lovely," Gillian told the others as she was completing her half. "Thank you for letting me do it. It looks beautiful." After Gillian and Vanda had done the initial honours, amid smiles and laughter all round, Olina tidied up the loose ends, declaring Laura's new look a great success. Laura said, "Since the last time I had my hair cut, nearly 3 years ago, I'd been patiently letting it grow. I've been cutting and donating hair to the Little Princess Trust for about 8 years now, as I know they are an amazing charity. It's an honour to help them. Hair is something most people take for granted, but losing it, especially as a child or young person, can have a massive impact. The Little Princess Trust is a national charity that provides real hair wigs to children and young people up to the age of 24 who have lost their own hair because of cancer treatment or other medical conditions. Founded in 2005, it has made and supplied more than 15,000 wigs. The Trust describes the many who support its work as heroes. Based near Sutton Scotney, the Boaz Project is a farm-based charity that provides therapeutic work opportunities for adults with learning difficulties. It has been supported in the past 2 years by both St Catherine's View and Colton Kerr's other Winchester home, Abbott's Barton. Turning Laura's haircut into a fundraising opportunity for the Boaz Project secured more than £100 from friends, families, colleagues and community contacts.
Sweet taste of success as business expands. A new sweet shop has opened in Winchester as a business expands from its existing location in the city. Sweet Station opened in Upper Brook Street on Wednesday, March the 27th, expanding from the shop owner's existing old-fashioned sweetie shop based in 62 High Street. The store in High Street, which has been open for 15 years, will remain open and continue to serve traditional sweets. With trade increasing, owner Judith Burnett decided to expand in the store formerly occupied by Bella Ling. Judith said the move had been made so customers would have more room to have a look at all the sweets on offer, as well as providing extra space for families with pushchairs and easier access for those with disabilities. The expansion had initially been discussed in August 2023, ahead of a Christmas opening, but this didn't materialise, with the shop instead opening for the first time ahead of the Easter weekend. Sweet Station boasts a selection of sweets and chocolate treats, including an extended pick-and-mix station and a larger supply of sweets imported from other countries, such as America. The new store has a nice wide open layout, is very colourful and vibrant and has more of a modern feel. It's also allowed us to create a larger and more extensive choice of sweets, increasing our stock of imported goodies, which we know customers will love. Going forward, we hope to install a slush machine and an ice cream fridge, ready for the hot summer season ahead. Come down and give us a try.
Camera Beer and Cider Festival returning. Camera will be bringing a beer and cider festival to Winchester this year after a gap of more than 4 years. With support from festival sponsors, the Flower Pots and Steamtown Brew Company, Camera will be bringing its Winchester Beer and Cider Festival to its new home in Winchester Student Union on Sparkford Road, West Hill, on Friday, June the 7th and Saturday, June the 8th. The festival will feature up to 75 highly recommended and locally and nationally brewed real ales, complemented by a large selection of ciders and perry. This year, the festival will be welcomed by Rob and Maz from Southampton's award-winning Olaf's Tun and the Bottle and Stoat, who will bring their craft bar. Food will be provided by the University of Winchester catering team. The festival will consist of 4 open sessions. A quiet session will take place on Friday, June the 7th, between 11:30 a.m. and 4 p.m., before the evening session on the same day, from 6 till 10:30 p.m., which will feature live music from duo Ben and Zan Lugo Keki. Saturday afternoon session, held between 11:30 a.m. and 4 p.m, will allow all to wake up the brains with the festival quiz. Before the festival welcomes the Blur Tones for Saturday evening session from 6 till 10:30. Ticket prices have been held at £10 a session and include entry to the festival and a souvenir festival glass, sponsored by Flower Pots.
That concludes our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors for selecting the extracts this week, to the copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams, and to our readers today, who were Tony Bergstrom.
Bye-bye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Jane Rutter.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope. And a reminder that you can also hear Winchester Talking Newspaper on AWAS Community Radio 99.8 FM and digital on Saturdays at 5 p.m.